Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and happy Wednesday. Today's June 28th, all day, so thanks for tuning in. Rebecca, I'm curious, in school, did you memorize all of your state capitals?
I did.
How well do you remember them?
Oh, no. I was afraid you were going to ask that.
Well, that's the next natural question.
It is, isn't it? And I set myself up for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm laser perfect with them, just so you know.
Oh, well, we're about to find out how good I am, aren't we?
No, I'm just going to say in 1836, on this day, the fourth U.S. President, James Madison, died in Montpelier, Virginia.
Montpelier? Montpelier?
You guys both missed the joke. It's amazing.
It's early, man.
So I was bragging about how well I knew the state capitals, then I mispronounced Montpelier.
I gotcha.
Yeah, that's all right. Anyway, here's a little tidbit about James Madison. He felt his voice was too annoying to become a minister, so he went into politics instead.
Where annoying voices are a benefit.
No, here's an odd fact known by few. He was also the shortest president at 5'4".
Yes.
Would a 5'4" guy be able to make it in today's American politics?
Statistically, the answer is no.
I would agree.
Because if you look at all of the races, at least since the television era, the tallest, most photogenic candidate has always won the presidency. It's
true.
A fact. And,
true.
And it's kind of crazy to think about. But, I mean, James Madison was the father of the Constitution. So, I mean, just because he was short in stature, but he was huge in influence.
Mm-hmm. So let me encourage you this morning, because it says in Hebrews 3:13, we're supposed to exhort each other for daily hope. So let me give you some daily hope. Isaiah 40:31 says, "But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength." Now, if you're in that situation today and you could use some renewed strength, just go to Scripture, because the Lord will provide that. And it says, "They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint." You know, isn't that just a nice promise that God always delivers every day, that we can go to him for strength and hope, and he will renew our strength every day? And Isaiah 41:10 says, "So do not fear, for I am with you." That is not negotiable. He is there with us. "Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Yay. It makes me happy. All right. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we have Bill English in studio. I love when guests come in studio. Just makes it so much more fun. It is 7 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. Song makes me smile. The Power of Love. And of course, that's the theme song to my next guest, Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com, who is in studio. What are you laughing for already?
The Power of Love. I like the song, Huey Lewis.
Yeah. Huey Lewis and the News. The Power of Love. Anyway, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be in studio with you.
It's very nice to have in studio guests. So here's the topic of today with Bill English. Here's the topic.
Yes.
What can a Christian do when they work for a difficult boss? Now, let's start with defining what a difficult boss is.
Well, several characteristics. They act childishly. In other words, they get mad easily. They throw a fit over minor displeasures, minor infractions, that kind of thing. They tend to be insecure, so they have to come across always being competent. One of the examples of this is that when they don't know the answer to a question, they'll make up something. They'll blow some hot air. They'll fill the air in order to look like they know what they're talking about. They're selfish. They often underpay their employees and expect their employees to flex for a lot of their demands. They can be disrespectful, egocentric in the sense that they don't know how what they do affects other people.
Say that one more time.
Egocentric. They don't know how what they do affects other people.
Okay.
Is there a better way for me to say that?
Well, no, I just had to hear it again.
Yeah.
So they're unaware?
They're unaware.
Okay.
Would be a good word. And they also miss how one person's actions affect another person in their environment. They just don't get the interplay between people in the office. They never praise or encourage or rarely do so, and they're usually very high-control people and they're micromanagers.
Mm-hmm.
These people are difficult to work for.
Mm-hmm. So if we're defining what a difficult boss is, you've done a really nice job of laying out some possible guidelines. What about something like, oh, I'm a Christian and I work for my boss, who I'm pretty sure is an alcoholic?
Yeah, usually these difficult bosses have some deep wounding in
mm-hmm.
their background.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are going to be people who have had abuse as a child, or they've perhaps been through several divorces, or they've been betrayed by a partner in business, or maybe a couple partners in business. But usually alcoholics, we think of alcoholism as a physical medical disease, and it certainly can be. But usually behind the alcoholism is some deep wounding.
Mm-hmm.
And the alcohol is simply a medication for the wounding, and then it becomes an addiction over time.
So if you're wounded, there's going to be a really good chance that you're going to want to be hyper-controlling. You're going to want to be absolutely micromanaging stuff.
You're going to want to medicate that wound. You're going to want to medicate that wound in some way.
Okay.
Okay. And it's going to be different things for different people. For some, it's going to be high control. For others, it's going to be some kind of a chemical. For some, it might be sex. For some, it might be actually withdrawing and becoming very passive and being almost a nobody in society.
Mm-hmm.
So, but somehow we always medicate our wounding.
Okay. If I'm a Christian and I go to work every day, and my boss will never offer me praise or encouragement. That's crazy.
Yeah, and it's really not helpful to the staff. I mean, bosses out there who are listening right now, you've got to give them some encouragement and praise, even when they make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody makes mistakes, and people need to be encouraged. That's who we are.
What's the boss thinking if he doesn't offer praise or encouragement?
He's usually focused on, and we'll use he generically here, it could be a she. He's usually focused on what didn't go the way he wanted it to.
Mm-hmm.
And what a person should have done better, and he's only focused on how things could be better, not the feelings of the person. Excuse me, not the feelings of the person that he's talking to.
Okay.
Coffee.
No, go ahead. So if the boss is insecure and he doesn't want to be seen as incompetent, and I assume if you are the boss, you're going to be competent most of the time, but there are going to be times when you're going to not know what the answer is, and if you always have to come across as the guy who knows or the woman who knows everything, you're going to cause a mistrust and breakdown with your employees, aren't you?
You are, and I would challenge the notion that if you're the boss, you're competent most of the time.
That's what I said, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I actually,
my mind
wandered when you said that first thing because I thought, well, is that really true? Because it's not. In a lot of family-owned businesses, because you're part of the lucky DNA club, you mm-hmm. end up being the boss. Doesn't mean at all that you have competence or ability to lead.
Okay. So if you have a difficult boss, and we've talked about some of the characteristics, let's talk about some of the effects that this difficult boss will have on the employees. Now, this is when it gets touchy.
It does get touchy. Mm-hmm. High stress is one.
All right. Stop taking calls. We've got a winner.
Do we?
No, I'm just saying.
So high stress is one. One is, and a couple of examples of that. Number one, you start to second guess your common minor decisions because you don't know how your boss is going to react. Remember,
mm-hmm.
your boss is a micromanager, and so you have to run through every decision in your mind, no matter how minor it is, to see what you think the boss would think. And that
mm-hmm.
just creates all kinds of stress
mm-hmm.
for a person because now we're second guessing the future, which is almost impossible to do accurately. Secondly, you're unable to get your work done on time and with quality because you're constantly having to go to your boss to get those minor decisions made. And that often ends up slowing down a project. And if your boss has any indecision at all within them, then those minor decisions languish on their desk. And it just creates all kinds of stress. On the one hand, you're expected to get your work done, the project done. On the other hand, you can't get your boss to make decisions that really you should be making in the first place, and you're really putting a catch-22.
Okay. So I would imagine the frustration levels are going to be sky high.
Sky high.
Yeah.
Yep.
And how are you going to make positive contributions to the workplace if you're walking on eggshells all day long?
Well, the way that you would make a positive contributions to the workplace is, first of all, to find a good mentor outside of yourself and outside of the work or environment. You need somebody to go talk to and find out if it's you, if it's the boss, if it's the work environment, if it's the combination of the three. Somebody who can help you kind of think clearly about the situation. One of the things that happens when you're under high stress is that you don't think clearly. And so, you know, high emotions, low reason. That's one of the reasons why we tell young people don't get in the back seat of a car, because when their emotions run high, their sense runs low.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just it's the same for adults. So when you have high stress, high frustration, you need an outside perspective in order to get your reasoning under control.
And what does that do to your own abilities and confidence? And when you go to work every day,
it destroys it over time. It really emasculates
this whole thing
time.
Is counterproductive.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. And this is an example of how a boss can actually be very detrimental to their organization in the long term by creating such stress and really emasculating people's abilities to rise to the level that they could and be all that they could be within the organization.
Mm-hmm. All right, Bill, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, I want to find out what we can do on the positive side. You said we'll find a good mentor, but there's got to be other things that we can do as well. And we want to find out what they are. It's 16 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning on the Early Morning Late Show. Bill Arnold here with you. Be right back.
Passing out his moans and groans. Devil ain't no lazy bones. He works 24 hours a day. Devil ain't lazy.
No, sorry.
No, the devil ain't lazy.
No, sorry.
He likes to see us fight and fuss. Makes us mean enough.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful...
Good morning. It's 18 minutes after the hour. I have Bill English in studio with me, fresh from his store-bought haircut.
That's right.
Which looks pretty good, by the way.
Hey, thanks.
Do they trim the beard, too, or just...
No, I do that on
that
my
yourself?
Own. Yeah, that's self-trimming.
All right. What does a Christian do when they work for a difficult boss? Maybe you're not even a Christian. What do you do when you work for a difficult boss? One of the things we can do, Bill, according to your excellent insight, is get a mentor, find a good mentor that can offer support and experience.
Yep. Wisdom, insight, that kind of thing. But the second one is the corollary, be a good mentor to others in the office. Okay, so offer support and experience to those younger than you. So mm-hmm. as you're learning how to deal with this boss, be a mentor to others in the office.
When is it being a mentor and when is it gossiping and triangulating? Because if I got a problem with my boss and I go to someone else that I work with, now does it look like I'm gossiping and triangulating when I should go right to the boss and say, hey, I got a problem?
Yeah, gossip is when I share my frustrations and I'm not working on a solution. Mentoring is where I'm recognizing the reality of what is, and I'm giving coaching to the other person on how to manage themselves better, more professionally in that situation.
Okay. So if you're going to be a good mentor, be straightforward and be calm and honest, because it's important to not let the emotions rise too high, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the calm and honest and straightforward thing is how you set a boundary with a difficult boss. So the difficult boss is kind of all over the place. They're ADD. They get angry easily, that kind of stuff. They're immature. They're childish. You need to be the adult in the room, even though you shouldn't have to be. You need to be the adult in the room. Be straightforward, calm, direct, and set your boundaries. And there's something that is behind that I think always has to be there. You always have to be willing to be fired in the next 15 minutes in order to do this. Okay? In order to be direct, straight, and calm, you always have to be willing to be fired.
How many people are willing to do that?
Not a lot. But,
okay.
But then what that means is they're going to negotiate away a good portion of their personhood in order to keep their job and appease their boss. And I think that's not the way that Christians should live.
Mm-hmm.
We don't negotiate away our values or our personhood for a ministry or a job. God doesn't call us to do that. So it seems to me you always need to be – in order to really survive in this kind of a situation in a healthy way, you need to be willing to be fired within the next 15 minutes.
Okay, what about the board of directors and accountability that the boss would have? Does the boss listen to these board of directors and talk about the relationship there, if you would? Because if the guy or woman who's the boss is a difficult boss and actually just mean and tyrannical, maybe that person just has to go.
Yeah, maybe they do. But a lot of times, especially in ministries, those types of people do not have strong boards. They have board members who are weak and ineffective and unwilling to confront the person. And they're willing to overlook all the negativity that this person brings to the table because of usually all the positives that they bring.
Mm-hmm.
Usually these difficult bosses tend to be highly talented, highly
charismatic
mm-hmm. people, but at the same time, they have this kind of this Jekyll Hyde piece to them,
yes.
where the other side is not very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Boards are often willing to overlook that not very nice side because of all the good that they bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And to all the board members out there, I would say, you can't do that. You have to confront this person about how they treat people, because how they treat people inevitably impacts the quality of whatever message it is that they're bringing to the pulpit or that they're bringing to your ministry.
Okay. Now, if you're a difficult boss, and maybe you're hearing this and you're driving to work or flying to work in your private jet and you're the difficult boss.
Or the private helicopter.
Or the private chopper.
Yeah.
What are some of the things you can do? What are some constructive steps you can take?
If you're a Christian difficult boss,
okay,
I think the first thing you need to do is admit your hypocrisy and your sin,
mm-hmm.
and get on your knees and confess your sin to God, repent of it, and then go to your staff and ask for their forgiveness.
Is that going to happen?
If you're really being led by the Holy Spirit, it will be.
Okay.
If you think that it's just a solid management technique that you're using to keep everybody under control and that you're not about to let your staff be outside of the grip of your fist, then I would suggest to you that you need to rethink how you manage people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, managing others like Christ manages us
mm-hmm.
is not a bad way to go.
Mm-hmm. So if you have employees that are breaking down in tears because you're being a jerk,
right?
You probably need to look at what you're doing, huh?
You do. You need to look at what you're doing, and you need to figure out. And you also need a mentor in order to figure out what it is that you're doing, what it is that you're saying that is causing your employees to break down in tears, that is causing your employees to really shy away from you and not interact with you the way that your organization needs in order to achieve all that it can achieve.
Mm-hmm. So Bill, give our listeners some pastoral encouragement today. If they're going to work and they have a difficult boss, maybe we should start by reminding them that they need to treat their job as an act of worship to God.
It is. And the biblical principles in play here are loving your enemies, honoring Christ in the workplace, being willing to suffer for the Lord. If you're in a ministry and you have a difficult boss, then being willing to suffer for the Lord and to further his kingdom, even if the shots are coming from another Christian, may be part of your call right now. And yet you need to learn to speak the truth in love, directly, calmly, straightforwardly, lovingly, but set your boundaries by doing those kinds of things. This is really difficult stuff.
It is, because when you say be willing to be fired within 15 minutes, I'm really struggling with that.
Are you?
A little bit, yeah.
You know, it's God is sovereign, right? And he knows what you're in. And if by doing righteousness, by doing good, in other words, speaking the truth in love, ends up getting you fired, you can entrust yourself to the Lord to know that he will take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
He has something in it for you, and he has something else for you to do. He is in the Ephesians 2:10. He is in the future preparing the work for you, and he's preparing you for that work. Maybe this firing is part of that.
Okay, well, maybe what I'm just thinking about is the way we can get carried away with emotion and we can try to get a pound of flesh in the moment. Even though we're speaking truth in love, it starts to feel like it's got an agenda, and
yeah.
You know you can trigger your boss, and all of a sudden you kind of wake up the next day going, God, I wish I didn't get fired yesterday.
Yeah, but you know, but that kind of vengeance is left to the Lord. It's best for us not to go there. We really do have to learn to love the difficult boss. Easy to say, hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
We have to love the difficult boss in a way that Christ does, but yet at the same time be direct and straightforward and loving with that person.
Yeah, and I do agree with that. So I appreciate this is not easy stuff we're talking about today.
No, it's not.
This is not
the
normal kind of conversations we have on the show, but this is important, and it's important to obviously honor and glorify Christ in everything you do and say. And if you need to stand up for the truth at work and it costs you your job, More power to you.
There you go.
All right. Bill English, thank you so much.
You
and
bet.
Have a great 4th of July weekend
you
with your family. And I will see you next week.
Okay, thanks.
All right. 3 minutes until the half hour. It's 27 after. We'll be right back. Good morning. It's half past the hour. You know, it's summertime. I love it. I love, love, love summer. And especially if you like to get on your motorcycle or your moped or even a riding bicycle. There's great community in that. And when we come back after the news, we're going to talk to Dave Cole, who's written a book about the culture of the Harley-Davidson community and what the church could learn from them. Be back in a minute. Good morning. Thanks for being with us today. It's 25 minutes until the top of the hour. As we endure pain and suffering, our faith is strengthened. Speaker and author Kristen Ditchfield talks about finding hope in the midst of ongoing suffering.
I think the longer you walk with Jesus, the more that character matures and develops. The more experience you have, the more that hope is founded. And you don't fade when the heat comes. You don't get so distressed by every wave. You begin to say, you know what, I have been here before. I have seen these things happen. I know that God is faithful. I have been through much worse than this, and God has seen me through. And I think that's one of the joys of getting older. I'm beginning to find benefits to this, to get older and then to see some benefits. And one of them is to say, you know what, I've been through a lot of garbage over the years, and God has seen me through every bit of it. And that gives me confidence that whatever garbage is ahead for me, He will see me through that too. I begin to have confidence and begin to have hope that, you know what, no matter what, He is with me. He's never failed me. And no matter how ugly it is, no matter how dark it is, no matter how difficult it is or painful, there's a way through this.
If you want to hear the full interview, go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and you can look for Battle Perseverance. Kristen Ditchfield is that author and speaker. And about 100 years ago, William Harley and Arthur Davidson had this idea to put this little company together, and it's still going pretty, pretty strong. And what can we learn from the culture of Harley-Davidson? We can learn lots. My next guest, Dr. David Cole, will be with us in just a minute.
Lying, aggression, anger, mood swings, new friends, changes in sleep patterns, all of these are red flags that your teen may be abusing drugs. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. When I was growing up, parents didn't worry about drugs until their teens got to high school. But these days, kids are beginning to experiment at younger and younger ages. So if you got a hunch about your teen's behavior, don't be afraid to administer a drug test every few weeks, unannounced, even if they squeal and protest. Your teen needs to know how serious you are about keeping drugs out of their life, even if it means putting them in rehab or reporting them to authorities. Better a few days behind bars than a lifetime in the grip of drugs.
Find more parenting help from Mark Gregston when you go online to parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
Welcome to the Early Morning Late Show. Bill Arnold here. You know, what does the church have in common with Harley Davidson? That's a good question. My guest, Dr. Dave Cole, is the author of that book. And sometimes you just want to read a book and you have it. You want the book to feel like you've just had a conversation with a good friend. And I think that book is exactly what you're looking for. We've got a lot to learn from what Harley Davidson has become and who they are. And Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Bill. It's great to be with you.
Thank you. Now, Harley's been around for 100 years. I know they're doing something right. I know they've always tried to keep the main thing, unique motorcycles, nice and loud, certain tone to them, certain power.
Right.
And what can we learn from them?
Well, there is a lot of things, as you mentioned, that we can learn from Harley Davidson. I wrote the book out of a passion that began in the year 2000 when a couple of parishioners came to me while I was pastoring in East Wenatchee. They wanted to know if I wanted to go for a ride, and I said, well, I don't have a bike. And they said, oh, don't worry, we've got one for you. So they took me up to this gentleman's house, and he opened the garage door, and here's a beautiful 1999 Road King Classic, red and black with all kinds of chrome, and handed me the keys and said, "Here you go." I said, "Oh, I get to use this one today." And he goes, "No, you don't get it. This one's yours. If you keep it clean, keep it insured, use this for ministry." And so that launched a motorcycle ministry in the Valley, and now has become a ministry for ministers and wives as well. So my passion began there with really understanding Harley, since I put over 100,000 miles on two different Harleys since then.
Wow. I've always been so impressed with the Harley-Davidson community, because from what I can tell, and I know people who have Harleys, they come from all different walks of life. But the minute you get a Harley, you're sort of grafted into the family. And it doesn't matter if you're an accountant or a doctor, or doesn't matter. You're in.
That's correct. It really is a tight community. And I didn't realize it when I first began how tight that community is. But now that I've taken two coast-to-coast trips with my wife across the nation, we've stopped in at a number of Harley shops a couple of times because the bike needed repair. I'm just really amazed at the way that even the dealerships treat you when you have a need, when you show up.
You know, there's been Harley-Davidson dealerships that have become destination spots. I mean, if you're taking a bike trip, you specifically want to go to a Harley shop or a store somewhere, maybe to get a souvenir T-shirt or something, because it's become part of the culture, hasn't it?
It has. I started collecting T-shirts back in 2000, and I can't tell you how many T-shirts that I've bought at different dealerships. My goal was to get one at every dealership. I don't know if I'm going to make that.
Uh-huh.
But I've had a couple of quilts made up. I figured they'll be great keepsakes for the grandkids.
Oh, absolutely. All right. So, Dave, what are some of the lessons we can learn as the church body from what Harley does so well?
Well, I think the first thing is Harley-Davidson encourages individuality. It starts with that culture you were talking about when you enter the doors. Today, society is trying to put individuals into stereotypes and into groups. And so, you either have to be left-wing or right-wing. You need to be conservative or liberal. It seems like there's this sociological pressure to put us into groups. And part of that pressure is if you can put somebody in a group, then you can objectify them and almost dehumanize them where you can judge them. Harley does just the opposite. When you come into the dealership, you are seen as an individual. If you are an outlaw biker, you're treated with the same respect as, even a minister like myself that comes in. So that individuality is really a big thing.
So we can learn right away as far as not letting us have a spirit of judgment towards people when they come in the door.
That's really what it is. I interviewed a Harley-Davidson staff in Seattle. And I asked them, if you had one thing to tell the church that we could learn, what would it be? And immediately they responded with acceptance versus judgment. And Harley does a great job in doing that. Part of it's marketing. They're a for-profit company. And they encourage you to buy a stock bike. But then they have all of these different custom-built parts for you to make the bike a representation of yourself. And I thought, well, what would happen if the church did that, if we quit stereotyping people, treated them like individuals when they came in, and let them know, your walk with Christ is going to be a lot different than anybody else's. It's going to be unique. It's going to be individual. But let us walk with you on that journey.
Mm-hmm. So, Dave, would you say that we've become a little bit more inward focused over time, and we're starting to get the less competent at connecting with our culture today?
Yes. In fact, statistics will reveal that 75% of unchurched people claim to not have a friend who is a Christ follower. And so with that absence of friendship, they base their opinions on what they're receiving from television, sitcoms, the news, and really the perceptions are negatives, and many of them are untrue.
Mm-hmm. So I'm getting curious, and we need to take a little break here just coming up, but obviously 100,000 miles you've ridden on a Harley. And is that two bikes, or is that one bike? Or
that took two bikes. The first one got a little worn out. That 99 Road King had about 78,000 miles.
Okay. So
I traded it in on an Ultra Classic. Yeah.
Okay. So obviously you've had lots of opportunities to come into the community of Harley riders, and as a man of God, you've had many opportunities to have the conversation go to spiritual, I would imagine. And I want to hear about some of those stories, because I bet they're absolutely fascinating. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, more with Dave Cole, his book, What the Church Can Learn from Harley Davidson. Be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I am talking to Dave Cole. He's written a book called What the Church Can Learn from Harley Davidson. And I have a 125cc scooter, Dave. So don't make fun of me yet. But I oftentimes, when I will pull up to some guy on a Harley at the stoplight, I'll always look to him and say, I'll race you, provided you give me a 6-mile head start. And
it's a lot of fun. My brother gives me a bad time for riding a dangerous motorcycle, but I found out the other day he even had a moped for a while. So, I think it just depends on what type of two wheels you want to be riding on.
Yeah, I am never more aware of my driving and my awareness when I'm on a bike. And you're probably the same way, because you have to look out for everybody. And you are 100% focused. You're not doing anything other than paying attention. Does that sound fair?
Yes. It's amazing how all of your senses are alert the entire time, or they at least should be alert, because you have to pay attention in order to survive. The bike itself is fairly safe. As long as you watch your speeds, those bikes corner well, they'll stop faster than an automobile. But the most dangerous thing are objects in the road.
Oh,
anything
sure.
From animals to automobiles.
Sure. So, Dave, tell us some of the stories of connections you've made with other Harley friends, and how you've had a chance to have spiritual conversations with them.
Right. I wrote a chapter about different intersections. I call them intersections of the highway. And how I believe that God opens up these divine opportunities for us as Christ followers, but many times we're very hesitant to move forward in those opportunities. Some of that is our life is so fast-paced, we're racing through the intersections, we don't even see the individuals that we should. And so in the book, I talk about how we really need to slow down, and we need to ask ourselves, what kind of intersections are Jesus, is he opening up for us? And so while riding on motorcycles, I found that they're like a magnet. You know, not too many people stop me when I'm in a suit heading for a wedding or for a funeral to officiate. But when I'm in my leathers on a motorcycle, they're like magnets, and people will come out of the woodwork and start talking about their experiences, and then even share about their own life experiences. So it's just a great opportunity to be able to make new friendships.
Mm-hmm. And have you had anyone in particular that you can share a story of that? Was maybe a really tough case that you had a chance to open up his or her mind to the gospel?
Yes. I had one instance. Our group, one summer, Debbie and I, my wife and I, lead a trip every summer for ministers and their spouses. And this year we were heading to Sturgis. We pulled into Rapid City, and while we were unloading our bikes, this gentleman who'd been sitting in a seat came up to me and started talking. And we have these little Hope for the Highway New Testaments, and after talking with him for a while, I just handed it to him and said, we'll see you later. The next morning, I came out to my bike, and he's sitting in the same chair, and he says, hey, I want you to know I've been reading that book. And I said, really? He goes, yeah, my truck is broke down. I'm a cattleman, and it looks like it's going to take like $20,000 to repair my truck, and it's a diesel. And so I just said, hey, I'd like to just say a prayer for you. So we prayed. The next morning, he was out at the bench and said, hey, I've got good news. He said, the engine's not going to cost that much. They're able to do it for a lot less. Thanks for praying. And he said, you know, I've been thinking, I need to get back in church. And started talking about his experiences in church, and had a rough divorce and felt like the church had pushed him out. And so I was able to just talk to him that God never pushes us out, that there's always second chances. And so we prayed for him and believe that his life's going to be a much better situation because of our connection, the intersection that we had.
That's really a great story, Dave. You know, I think as Christians, we all need to improve our gift of noticing, just noticing people, looking at their situation and trying to make a connection. And when you have a Harley and you have an instant entree with other Harley people, you've just opened up a whole world of evangelism, haven't you?
You really do. And it's really being sensitive to what Jesus is doing in their life before we get there. I think for so long, the church saw evangelism as kind of like a car salesman does, that we've got to push the sale and complete the sale. When I do evangelism, I take a little different technique. I want to be a tour guide. And I believe that the person that I come in contact with has probably had other Christians that have talked to them, and I'm just one of many that is helping to guide this person along their faith journey to where they can understand who Jesus is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when you take this approach as a tour guide, it just makes a big difference in how you present Jesus to that person. Really, the takeaway, if you look at the entire book, is I'm challenging the church to become outward focused. Any organization over time starts spending more effort, more energy on the people inside, the people in the club, and we forget the why that we exist. The church exists for this great commission that Jesus gave us, and that was go into all the world and share the good news about Jesus Christ. And so I'm challenging the church, not just the ministers, not just those on staff, but every Christ follower to get outside and make relationships with people and start sharing the hope of Jesus to those in their community.
Mm-hmm. And Dave, you'll probably admit as a Harley rider, there is a mini thrill every time you get on it, isn't there?
Right. They say that you never see a motorcycle parked at a psychiatrist office. I kind of believe that.
I agree. Dave, thank you so much for coming on the show and his book, What the Church Can Learn from Harley Davidson. It's a delightful read. Thanks for being a guest, and have a great week.
Thank you, Bill.
And happy riding. Thanks so much.
Okay.
All right, we'll take a
thank
short
you.
Break and be right back. More of the Early Morning Late Show in just a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.